The TSW Roundtable is a proud member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Head to StarWarsCommonwealth.com and take your first steps into a larger world. Ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the TSW Roundtable. I am Robert Cass, and I'll be your moderator once again. And it is a great pleasure to introduce a couple of fellows from the network. As you know, if you've listened to this show before, usually we have a few hosts from around the Star Wars Commonwealth Network join me, and we are usually joined by some listeners. But we have somebody on from the left coast or the west coast in San Diego today. And in order to get the times right, we're kind of having a North American party here. And most of the VIPs, of course, if I know you're listening and we miss you and we wish you were on, but we just couldn't make the times work because right now I think it's stupid o'clock in the UK as we're recording. So we're just going to we got a bunch of questions from you guys and we appreciate it. And we'll be passing them around the round table and we'll see how it goes. So our first co-host is Eric from the San Diego Sabres.
Hello, how you doing?
Very good. Hey Eric, it's so you're the San Diego Sabres, the newest show on the network.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a privilege to be part of it.
Yeah, well, we're happy to have you, and I've had a chance to listen to your show, and it's excellent. Like,
thank you.
I think with this network, where everybody's filling in a certain niche, you mean, and you guys have, right. You guys have a great general show, and you have great general conversation about Star Wars overall. But also, you can get in, you can explain all the Saber stuff in a little bit. But also, you fill another void we were missing, something we didn't quite cover over the network.
Oh, cool. Well, yeah, I'm glad we could do that and be a part of it.
Awesome. Okay, well, before we get into that, I'd like to introduce our next co-host, and I finally got him from the Tumbling Saber, and now I've officially collected them all, just like my Pokemon friend, Steve, from the Tumbling Saber.
Hey, Rob.
Hey. Now, you do the niche show, Journals of the Willing, with Kyle, right?
Right. So we cover all of the novels, the comics, all of the printed materials that contribute to the overall canon.
Awesome. Yeah, and that's what is it? You guys go bi-weekly or monthly?
We plan to do bi-weekly, so twice a month. I just started a new job, so scheduling has been kind of tough lately.
Right.
So we've been late a couple of times.
Yeah.
But it happens.
And, yeah, exactly. But yeah. And also, too, if you guys are chewing down novels, like not only do you have to schedule time to record your show, you have to get through an entire novel, like, and like, you know, I'm sure everybody reads at different speeds, but even just life in general getting in the way, like, that must be kind of overwhelming sometimes, like.
Absolutely. I mean, it feels almost like being back in English class. Like, yes. It's like, I gotta get this book done by the deadline, and I actually converted over to doing audiobooks, just because with the work I'm doing, it just kind of makes it easier. I'm a social worker, so my previous job, I was doing a lot of house visits.
Right.
So I would have crazy car, like, commutes in the car. So I would just have all this time to listen to something. So rather than like carving out like a couple hours close to midnight, I would just kind of listen along.
Awesome.
So that's how I was able to keep up with the last few.
Yeah, no, it's tough. Believe me, I do it too. I have the luxury of being able to have an earbud in my ear at work. And no, I'm not, a psychiatrist or anything like that, where I should be paying attention. I can, so I understand that. Yeah. And once in a while, I'll get an audiobook and just plug it in my ear. And just, it's a great way to keep up, especially now, because everything is canon. Like, there's nothing, like, with Legends put aside, and everything you pick up and read, like, whether it be comics or the books, like, everything counts now.
You know, yep.
So. Excellent. Okay, so what I'm going to do, I'm going to pass it back to Eric. Because you are the new show on the network, can you tell us a little about what you do with the lightsaber? Is it dueling? Or, and I'll just let you carry on with it because I don't want to sound too simple about it.
Yeah, no problem. Essentially, we have a saber combat school, and when I say saber, obviously lightsabers, but it's unique in the fact that we have a lot of different people, students and knights alike, from very different aspects and backgrounds of swordplay. So it's essentially, a good way to think of it is like a mixed martial arts of swordplay.
Right.
So we use the lightsabers, like the Ultra Saber, Saber Forge, those kind of battle-ready lightsabers. And we practice in two different parks, depending on what day it is. Wednesday is at a different location than Saturdays. And I teach general classes and more advanced classes for knights and elite members. And then my wife actually teaches beginning classes. And what we teach is essentially foundational forms like Shicho,
okay,
which is general stuff that applies to most forms of swordplay or bladed combat. And then depending on where you want to go after that or what kind of background you've had already, you would probably be, like, let's say if you were a fencer, you'd probably be drawn more to Makashi. If you participated in a lot of Hema or European-style martial arts, you'd probably be drawn to Gem So.
Okay.
And so essentially, it's a big combat school, for lack of a better term.
Well, no, that's excellent. So you must, when you're watching movies, or especially Star Wars films, like, mm-hmm, when you see something, like, do you recognize stuff that us, the layperson, when it comes to saber fighting or dueling, would not pick up on?
I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, let's say the, what was that last Rebels episode from the animated series when Obi-Wan took on Darth Maul?
Oh, yes. That was Sarisu at its finest.
Yes. Okay, yeah. So when I saw that, when I looked at it, like I said, and I have no idea what they're doing. I do not pretend to know anything about that. But I go, oh, I see Obi-Wan. I see he made, like, the Qui-Gon stance from Phantom Menace. And then he sees Darth Maul recognize it. And then he knows what he's going to do on the next move, so then he gets them in two strikes and it's over. Like, that's because just from being a huge Star Wars fan, that's what I see. But you must see, like, am I kind of close?
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much actually, because the lightsaber form three Sarisu is essentially what Obi-Wan had mastered completely.
Okay.
I believe Mace said that he wasn't a master of the form, he was the master of the form.
Oh, wow.
And what Form 3 is essentially complete defense. And okay, so very few things are stated to be able to get through a Master of Sarisu. And because this part is getting into headcanon, but but when you have someone like Darth Maul, who was trained in all forms mildly, but heavily favored Juyo, which is the seventh form, highly aggressive, wildly unpredictable.
Okay.
Obi-Wan had fought him before, and Obi-Wan was much older and much more experienced now. And it's said that a well-practiced Juyo was one of the few things that could break a Form 3 guard. But after all that Maul had been through and Obi-Wan had been through, Maul was just kind of scraping by to survive at this point.
Right.
And, I mean, Obi-Wan was in a similar position, but he had many years to refine and really master his form. And if you notice in the episode, Maul went in to do a similar attack to what he did to Qui-Gon back on Naboo, and Obi-Wan just closed him out and just ended the fight immediately.
Yeah, see, that's when I watched it. I know, and Steve, you saw the episode, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, so, and when I saw it, I'm like, I just noticed Obi-Wan taking that stance at Qui-Gon. I don't know if he was baiting him just to see if he would react similar, and then, like, it's like a chess match. It's like, he's like, okay, I got you in three moves. Like, once he recognized what he was doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And with a lot of the newer stuff, you can see a lot of, the canon form influence on a lot of the combat.
Right.
Which is quite different from the original trilogy and even some of the sequels. But they've definitely worked in, like, legitimate forms, like, at least their forms, the classic saber forms, into the newer material.
Awesome. And so, yeah, that's and it's, like I said, it's another kind of little niche that you fill. And, like, even with Steve, when you're Journals of the Willing, when you're covering the novels, like, that's a huge area. I know Skyhoppers have jumped on and they're doing a monthly novel show too, and it's but there's so much ground to cover. Recently I started, I'm joined the Astromech Builders Club. So I'm about 40% into an R2 build. So it's really good. Like, that's kind of my little thing. I do a little YouTube stuff for talkstarwars.co.uk. And of course now you have Rob from Generation X-Wing. He's the 501st rookie. He's trying to get into the 501st, so he's kind of covering that ground. So like, we got a lot of people covering a lot of bases that no one person could ever possibly do. Like, you can be the biggest fan in the world, there's no way you're going to do it all.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
There's so much out there.
All right, well, what I'm going to do, I'm going to pop on. I'm going to get we're a little bit into the show. We're going to squeeze in a question here to start things off. And this one is from Star Wars, Talk Star Wars VIP Matt Keegan, all the way from Australia. And no, I'm not going to use the accent. My Canadian one will have to suffice. Okay, here's his. Here's what he posted today. He said, here's an observation. Humans seem to be the dominant species when it comes to being a Jedi. Alien species are the minority here. So why are humans the minority when it comes to pod racing? The Chosen One is the only human to have ever raced a pod racer. His reflexes are slightly superior to an alien species, yet aliens make up less Jedi numbers. Are aliens just naturally have a natural agility for lightning flash reflexes without high midichlorian count? And why do midichlorians favor humans? So Steve, did you get all that?
It's an interesting question.
Yeah, basically saying, you know, Anakin was the only human to race pod races, and obviously we know why, because he is the Chosen One. You know, like, we know the reasons why his reflexes are so good. And he's asking, are aliens just got quicker reflexes, and why do midichlorians seem to favor humans?
I think, it's hard to think of an in-canon reasoning behind it.
Right.
I feel like it's from a Lucasfilm perspective. I think as fans, they want us to see ourselves in the Jedi. So I think from a story standpoint and the writing, it just makes sense to have more human Jedi and Sith.
Right.
Being that those are kind of our main protagonists and antagonists.
Yeah.
So as, you know, and only humans are watching these movies.
Yeah, of
so,
course.
You know, I mean, I don't know. My dog does kind of get into Star Wars when it's on, but probably for the lights and sounds. But, I mean, I think it just comes from a story standpoint. But, I mean, within canon, I'm sure there's some reference somewhere. Maybe particular races are just more agile, so therefore maybe they're more prone to pod racing or some more physical sport or what have you.
Right.
And I don't know. I think it also just depends on also the society within it. I mean, if humans are connecting, if humans are a little more tight-knit, perhaps there's more communication there. Therefore, if someone is more prone to midichlorians, perhaps there's just more, I'm going to send you off to.
Yeah, maybe it's more accepted. Like, I'm sure not every Bith is a musician that wishes he was playing in a cantina somewhere. You mean, sure, you know, it's just one of those things, I guess. It's one of the, like, and like you said, everybody's human. Eric, what do you think? Do you think there's anything to this, or is it just...
I was thinking pretty much along the same lines. I mean, it's a matter of relatability when it comes to making the film. As far as talking about, you know, mainly human or humanoid-esque main characters in Jedi.
Right.
And then... as far as the pod racing goes, I mean, you know, there are certain species of insects, such as like flies. If you ever find it hard to swat a fly sometimes, it's because they can perceive things moving a bit slower than they actually are. So they kind of see it a little bit faster, so they have more time to react.
Yeah, it's almost like frames per second when it comes to film. Like if we're seeing 32, they're seeing like 64. So everything is slightly askew for. So if you're saying that pertains like to aliens, maybe there's your answer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. I feel like in universe, it's kind of hard to come up with an answer for that one because I'm not sure it's ever been stated,
right?
Like why? But I feel like just different makeup of aliens has something to do with it as far as pod racing goes.
Yeah, of course. No, and well, for me, I think obviously Steve has a great point when it comes to relatability. And also, I think maybe it was just the pain in the butt of putting in somebody makeup for an entire movie. Like, it's okay for scenes, like the cantina scene is wildly full of aliens, but that's not the whole movie. You see the pod race, which is a ton of aliens, but again, that's not for the whole movie. But your main characters are human because it's easier to dress them up and get your shooting done. And if you notice, like the Clone Wars and Rebels, they have a lot more, especially the Clone Wars, they have a lot more alien Jedi because it's animation. It doesn't take any more money or funds or any to animate an alien than it does to animate a human. Actually, it's probably easier to animate an alien because you don't have to get it so perfect to the eye.
Right. I'd be curious to see what we see moving forward, because obviously the in canon reasoning is the only Jedi around that we know of are Skywalker lineage,
right?
And they're obviously humans. So I'd be curious to see, you know, especially Luke's school, you know, moving forward, episode 8, 9, if we get some flashbacks or something, how many of those Padawan were human versus alien?
Yes,
I'd be curious to see that makeup.
Oh, so many questions to be answered. It's that's the problem. I was discussing this. I recorded a TSW Comics. That's that monthly comic show I do with Mark from Talk Star Wars. Yep. We recorded that this morning, and I was up. We started recording at 8 in the morning here. Well, he was 1 in the afternoon in the UK, but so I was recording first thing in the morning. Now I'm recording a little bit later in the evening. But we were discussing that too. It seems like every rock you turn over for Star Wars, and every time you pull a string and you think, oh, here's my answer, well, that string just keeps coming out and it just spills out into way more questions. Like, it's like another rabbit hole you fall down. It's like, oh, well, here we go. So, awesome. Okay, well, I think we got that covered. But, speaking of Mark, here's a segue. Mark, when I was talking to him this morning, he had a question, so I said, well, tweet it at me, and here it is. He said, for the TSW Roundtable, Mark from Talk Star Wars says, do you think Rian Johnson might introduce Force possession into Star Wars canon and have Snoke be a body inhabited by an ancient Sith spirit? Eric, we'll throw it to you first. What do you think of that loaded question? Yeah.
Right. You know, that's really interesting. I'd be okay with that. I think that'd be really cool, actually. There's a lot of legend stories with Force spirits and, like, ancient entities, and I think that'd be actually pretty cool, because the body that Snoke's in now, or from what we've seen, doesn't look very capable, at least at first glance. Again, you know, not to judge something by its appearance with what Yoda says, but yeah. I'd be okay with that. I think that might actually be plausible.
Yeah. Steve, what do you think? There's anything to this? Do you think Force possession?
It's definitely possible. I think as far as the new canon goes, we're definitely seeing hints of that being more possible. If for anyone who's following the Dr. Aphra series,
yes.
You know, the essence of Roar, an ancient Force user, was placed in a kyber crystal and has been able to communicate. So there's some Force spirit jumping happening.
Right.
So whether that's just the story group putting in little hints of, like, what's to come. So that's like what I'm always vigilant now. I was like, you know, we're reading all these stories and we're always thinking, oh, well, they can't do too much because they're tied to a specific timeline. We know this person needs to live. This person needs to die. Yada, yada. But, you know, I'm always wondering, is like these little new aspects, are they just kind of like priming the fan base for these bigger concepts and just kind of like taking the temperature? So because of that Roar storyline alone, I think it's definitely possible.
Yeah, well, I think because of what you're saying, also too, I just read Dr. Aphra number 9 this morning, and I was I think you're right. With if you combine the ability to have a Force ghost, obviously, like, they're just a ghost, and you combine, obviously, the Jedi have the ability with this artifact, they can possess certain things. It's not too far of a stretch to say that the Sith might be able to possess, a Sith spirit might be able to possess another person, or another force capable person. I don't know if midichlorians would have anything to do with that or would help in any way. I think it's possible. I really like, of course it's Star Wars. Anything's possible. you can do the Kessel Run in what, 12 parsecs? Like, sure, whatever. I think it's possible. Do I like the idea? Nah, I don't know. I don't know if I'm just being the old curmudgeon guy saying get off my lawn, but it just seemed, I'd be okay if Snoke was just his own thing. He's just an old guy. He's been around. Maybe he's one of the authors of the Journals of the Wills. Like, maybe he was there when stuff was being put from, like, ink to parchment. Maybe that's what he is, because it's not out of the realm of possibility to have somebody be really old in Star Wars. Well, look at Yoda. He was almost 900 when he died. So it's not, we're not handcuffed with the, okay, you can only go to 100, 105 tops, and then boom, you got to be written out because you're a human or susceptible you got a 100-year span to play in. Like, obviously with different aliens, we can go whatever you write. That's what it is. Do I think it's possible? Yeah. Do I like it? Yeah, I don't know. No, not really. But, we'll see. I don't know. I'm buying my ticket opening night anyway. It doesn't matter what they throw.
Right, regardless. But
yeah, exactly. Yeah. It just, but what do you, just a side note on this question. What do you guys think? I go to Eric first. What do you think of all this, the Snoke hype and theories? Like, are you okay with just being, here's Snoke, here's a new guy? Or does he have to tie in? Or is it just too Star Wars? Like it just seems everything's about the Skywalkers, like everything has got to tie. Can it be its own thing? What do you think?
Right. I mean, I feel like it is going to be its own thing, but I also understand the perspective of wanting Snoke as a character to tie into something else, even if it's something vague or something from the past.
Right.
I think people like that familiarity, or they, how do I say this? I'm a big fan of the character of Plagueis, so that's what I always wanted, yes, was for him to be in an actual movie. And so when the whole Snoke thing started to happen, it was like, that'd be pretty cool, I'm not going to lie. But it's because, and it's coming back to the familiarity aspect, like Plagueis, besides the novels, is only mentioned a few times in the movies. And so, people are familiar that this is a character, but we don't really know a lot about him. So I think people that are in that camp of wanting Snoke to be something that we already kind of know about.
Yeah.
They're
not handcuffed with too much movie canon. They just, like, he's a name right. drop, and they can just take it from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really wanted it to be Plagueis for the longest time. It's not going to happen, but I definitely see both sides to it.
Well, I think Steve and I think we talked about this before. I got Darth Plagueis, the Legends novel on audiobook. It's like 14 hours long, and I, without exaggeration, probably heard it 10 times. Like, I love that novel, and I think, like you said about Plagueis, my wish for him to be Plagueis, like, I prefer him just to be his own thing, but if he's going to be something, like, and I'm with you, I'm really rooting for Plagueis, it's just because that novel was so awesome. But now,
yeah.
Now I have to kind of separate it, going, okay, that doesn't count anymore. Right. So I have to take my, because I've like, oh, I want that novel to be canon. Like, if I got to take, if I've got to pick five novels from Legends to be canon, that's going to be number one for me anyway. So I'm right there with you. I just, but again, I'm the same. He can be left alone. Steve, what do you think? Does he have to be a Skywalker again? Or what?
No, I think if Star Wars wasn't like an episodic space opera, I'd be okay with Snoke being Snoke and, not really having any tie per se.
Right.
Because it's like, I think George Lucas said it's like poetry. There's stanzas, and I think just because being a novel guy myself and just like I love storytelling just in general, the art of it.
Right.
I think it being random or not really being tied to the DNA of the story that we know already.
Okay.
Kind of takes away from an arc, you know? I mean, because like, I feel like, you know, we have the standalone movies, we have the comics, we could explore these other sides of the universe. I think as far as the episodes go, it needs to feel like a complete thematic story.
Right.
And if he's not Plagueis, if he's not someone, you know, in the story itself, it needs to feel like there's a reason, like it's mirroring something or something happened in the prequels or the original trilogy that led to Snoke existing.
Okay.
I
see exactly what you mean. Like, it's almost like if we watch Force Awakens and we in hindsight realize, oh, he's just this new thing, then you can just make up anything. It's like, oh, look at, like, the Jedi, they destroyed the second Death Star, they're all partying on Endor with the Ewoks, and then all of a sudden, oh, I'll just make a new villain, and oh, now you're in peril again. Like,
right, it almost has, like, a Monster of the Week vibe.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and I want there to be some thematic linkage. Whatever it is, I trust them. I think they have a good plan. You know, I'm gonna wait to see 8 and 9. Before I can make like a final judgment.
Yes,
but
of course.
That's my hope, is that there's some nine episode arc that we can like look back and be like, this is one story.
Yeah. Well, you know? I know it's another loaded question, but I think I'm like with Eric, just because of my love of the Darth Plagueis, I'd love to see him be Plagueis, but then I don't want anything to change from what I read. So I think if he was Plagueis and then he tweaked his character a bit, I'd be like, oh, well, no, I don't like it. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
they could always retroactively canonize the novel. I don't know how, if they, so from your experience, if they did that, would it contradict a lot? That's new canon?
No, it wouldn't. I don't think it would contradict anything in the canon. But the problem is then you start tugging on that. Well, what do you do with the Han Solo original, like his original trilogy of books? And what do you do with the Thrawn trilogy? What do you like? If I know that it's not going to happen, because if they pull out that string, then fandom will just go bananas.
Right. Oh, we want this and we want that.
That's
what you mean? Yeah.
Well, you gave Rob from, you mean, Toronto, Ontario, Darth Plagueis. How come I can't get my original Thrawn trilogy down here and, you mean, wherever?
right.
You know what I mean? Like, they can't, they just, I understand why they can't. So, well, okay. Well, that was a loaded beginning to the show, or the first half. So, I'm going to take a quick pause. We're going to hear from a sponsor, and then we'll be back with some more questions. So we'll see you on the other side. All right, welcome back. Okay, second half of the show, guys. We got a couple more questions. I'm going to pull one up here. This is from Nathan Roberts. He's a VIP with Talk Star Wars, and he messaged me this. What rights do clones have? Very blanket statement. Steve. I see you giggling over there. What do you think?
Oh, jeez, it's bringing up a lot of socioeconomic, political.
Oh, I know.
But
I know.
Anyway, they didn't ask to be created, so I feel I don't know. They're copies of people. They're humans. They have human rights. I don't know. I'm gonna go with that. They have human rights. I think they have. I mean, they were kind of born into slavery.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we've established slavery exists in the Star Wars universe. They've established it's a bad thing, just as it is in our universe.
Of course, yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah.
Well, no, exactly. And we know, obviously, like, we're not going to get too political or anything like that, or start preaching at people. But we know from just general history that it's, you know, I mean, yeah, people are born in slavery, and it wasn't good. You know what I mean? Like, you know, so I'm the same way. I think, yeah, sure, they're obviously, they're people or whatever people are in the galaxy far, far away. It's like they're basically bred to be cannon fodder, which is horrible, you know. And then a lot of them are taught their whole short life because they got the speed growing going. I don't know. They're mm-hmm. So their short childhood, they're taught to, you mean, be military and crave the military. And, you know, so it's a sticky thing. And obviously, it's, of course, they have rights. Yeah, they're people.
An interesting that question came in, because I just finished reading the first two Darth Vader issues.
Yep.
For the new volume 2, and they get into this you know, I don't want to do too many spoilers, but in the second issue, Vader kind of comes across an old, like a cargo bay with clone troopers, and they're kind of just like, they're kind of given like these kind of BS missions now, you know, catalog these Jedi pieces, and you know, and they're kind of like wondering, it's like, what's our life now that the Clone Wars are over? So I think it's just interesting, you know, that they're kind of exploring their feelings regardless. Yeah.
And I'm quite sure that's because I know Nathan keeps up on it too. I'm quite sure this is what he was getting at.
Yeah.
I mean, with like the reason why you were bred basically is for war. And once that's over, like I was reading the same thing you were reading, and it was, they're doing menial tasks. He's like, wow, is this our life now? So, Eric, what do you think? Are we a clean sweep? Do clones have rights? Or what rights do clones have? Is the question.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, they're soldiers, and they didn't even have the choice to be soldiers, so I feel like they should be taken care of quite well afterwards if they live that long.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, they're people, so yeah, of course.
So, okay, yeah, so Nathan, yeah, I think we got you there. I understand where you're coming from with that question, but yeah, definitely, they're, as regular people, we're looking, yeah, they're people, they have rights. Do they have rights in Star Wars? No, they don't.
Oh.
You mean, like, because they were born into the Empire, or, sorry, the Republic, and then turned Empire. Like, you mean, do they have him? No, because of the storytelling, but should they? Yeah, of course they should. All right, I got one more here, and this, we're going to chew on this for a while, I'm quite sure. But Jeremy Rowling from the UK, he put out this question to me. He said, every roundtable guest should give their rankings from 1 to 7 and then have a heated debate. Now, obviously, he's talking the films, and I'm assuming he's leaving out Rogue One and the Clone Wars film.
Okay, so no Rogue One.
So, 1 to 7, yeah. You know what? I'm gonna include Rogue One. What, like, obviously, we'll leave out the animated, but just as far as the projected films, or digitally projected, whatever they're doing now. with every movie that's been out now, I'm gonna go to Eric first. Do you have a standing list? Or you have a revolving list?
It changes from time to time, usually depending on which ones I've watched most recently.
Right.
I'd have to say at the top, though, is usually either Empire or New Hope.
Okay.
Usually followed by 3. I love the fight scenes in that movie, and that's kind of like my whole thing. I live for the martial aspect of stuff.
Yeah.
And then probably Jedi, and then Force Awakens, and then 1, and then 2.
Yeah, I completely see what you're saying with Revenge of the Sith. 1 and 2, was it the politicalness of them, or just overall? Like, if you're just pulling your DVDs or Blu-rays or whatever you have out of their case and you're putting them in, is 1 and 2 on the bottom just because of what they are, or was it just too political, not enough Star Wars?
No, it's purely based on how much I enjoyed the films.
Okay.
Not really much to do with the politics, because I just view that as world building.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Great. Steve.
I'm just jotting down my list real quick.
Yes. No. Of course.
I needed a visual so I could like follow it along. Okay. So my top one kind of teeters between Empire and Force Awakens.
Okay.
But at the moment, I could just say like 5 and 7. I'll put that in order for sake of putting it in order. Third, I would say Rogue One.
Yeah.
Then New Hope.
Yep.
Then Return.
Yep.
Then Revenge. Then Phantom and Attack of the Clones.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. Well, you're slightly different. Sorry, I didn't get. I got to go back to Eric for a quick second. Rogue One. Does that sit in there anywhere? Does it?
Oh, whoops. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I would say I'd put that
above Force, because you have like Empire, New Hope, Revenge of the Sith, Jedi, Force Awakens, 1 and 2.
I'd put it above Jedi.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Sorry. Okay. Now we'll get back to Steve here. Okay. So Empire. Do we have to get into the reasons? I'm sure. I know, without giving anything away, that's probably going to top my list as well.
Right.
Force Awakens and Rogue One, these are the new ones that come out. They trump everything else for you, Steve. So is there something
Absolutely.
About the, is there something about the new the way they're heading or the new film what they're doing with it?
So I love just character development. I love character stories.
Right.
So for me, Rogue One and Force Awakens have been really character centric. Right. And you know, we have character development in the other films, but I feel like what Lucasfilm is doing now is they're really putting the characters up and center. Like, it's not just plot heavy or action heavy. Sure, there's crap ton of action. You know, they're going to use that CGI for all it's worth. But, you know, I think Jin and Rey have been such strong protagonists as far as their arc and their development.
Right.
So, as well as John Boyega is Finn, I think, you know, where he's coming from, you know, and Han Solo and Kylo Ren. I really love where they're taking these characters emotionally.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to agree with you there. Like, it's just, it's something. See, I teeter from, off the top of my head, I'm just like you, Steve, I was taking the advantage of being the moderator and using the time to jot down a list of myself. Because even I didn't really, I you know, when you think about it, people ask you all the time and they're like, ah, yeah, here's my favorite, here's my least favorite. What fills it up? Again, Empire, top of the list, and then not going too deep into it just for what it was. You know what I mean? It was just, I was in the theater when he said, I am your father. You know what I mean? So I got that immediate turn to my dad going, wait, what? What? You know what I mean? Like, it was just, my mind was blown all over that theater. Like, it was just, you know, so, and for a bunch of other reasons, it's held up. It's great storytelling. I love what they did with everything. It ended on a huge bummer. It was just like, wow, for a sequel or a middle movie, it made you, whether you were a super Star Wars fan or not, you had to see Jedi when it came out. Like, there's no way you weren't going to see
Absolutely.
It. Like, I mean, it was just one of the, it's just the setup of it was great. Me, number two, New Hope. Again, because I'm of the age where I saw it at a drive-in with my parents when I was very, very, very young. And it started this whole thing for me. And I don't know if, this is where it gets sticky. My next one is Force Awakens. Now, I know that's not, that may be revolved. You can ask me in a month from now, or maybe ask me after The Last Jedi with this new trilogy to see where it's setting up. That might drop. You mean it might, depending, obviously these aren't set in stone. But for me, Force Awakens did everything it should have done. From the trailer moments, to Chewie, I'm home, to giving us all the, you know, like the old, I mean, I know a lot of people were, it's the same as New Hope, or it's the same as this. Like, yeah, they had to, but they, J.J. Abrams was given this thing where he had to make everybody happy, but at the same time, not worry about, at the same time, rope in some of the young
right.
generation. So for everything it was, I walked out, and I don't know if it was because I was so starved for Star Wars, that was like, comedian Eddie Murphy said that. He goes, if you give a starving man a saltine cracker, he's gonna think it's, oh my god, this is amazing, this is fantastic. Like, it, you know, like
right.
You know, I mean, if you give somebody that's eating all the time and you give him a cracker, he's like, yeah, no, this is terrible, it's cracker. Yeah.
Could so I interject for a hot second?
Yeah.
No, because I completely agree. And my usual rebuttal for someone who says, oh, it's the same thing as A New Hope,
mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, but there is a twist to it, and you have to kind of point at the climax of the story, and that, like, the plot of The Force Awakens really isn't about blowing up Starkiller Base.
Right.
The real climactic moment is Rey and Kylo there. Like, if it was really A New Hope, Rey would have blown up Starkiller Base.
Yes.
And she, you know what I mean? Like, she wasn't, it wasn't her having using the Force, taking that shot. It was really Poe Dameron. And that was really kind of like a B plot, kind of C plot thing.
Yep.
You know, really is that emotional arc. So that's just usually what I say.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now we're on that. I'm going to bump back to Eric. What do you think? Force Awakens, that's like third from the bottom for you. Is it, did it not do it? Like, obviously we're talking about Star Wars. So yes, we can leave the caveat of, yes, we love them all. You know what I mean? Like, whatever you're saying, we're not going to take it as hating on Force Awakens.
It's a given.
Yeah. So, is it just because it just didn't live up to your expectations, or were you just, that's where it sits on your list?
I was pretty much in the same boat as you guys when I saw it the first time, and it was great. However, the more I would watch it, I've seen it probably at least a dozen times by now.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I would watch it, it, not plot point by plot point similarities, but it more or less is A New Hope. And as far as Rey goes, I had incredibly high hopes for Rey.
Right.
I think Daisy Ridley did a great job as Rey. I just think the character was not handled the way it should have been. And there's just, it would take me a long time to really go into it.
Yeah, but... Well, believe me, this is a safe place. Nobody's, and like I said, we're going on the assumption, I mean, you have a Star Wars podcast. Like, obviously, you're a fan of the franchise. We're not, I mean, throwing you under the bus.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Steve.
No, I was going to say, I have to ask, like, you know, so what if they had handled Rey differently? Now, how much do you think of it is contributed to that they're holding off so much for episode 8 and 9? Like, if you think back to, like, Luke Skywalker's story in A New Hope, I mean, they had made that not really thinking that they were going to make Empire Strikes Back. I mean, it really just wasn't. I mean, right. I mean, go back, like, George Lucas says he has all this planned, but really, I mean, it was just going to be Star Wars. And, you know, so, you know, Lucasfilm and the story group is really kind of planning this out. Now, do you think that they just kind of held back too much on Rey? Or, like, just kind of what do you think it was that contributed to that feeling?
I do think that's a big portion of it. Like, I do think that is probably the main contributing factor, is that there is definitely more to come. And she was just, there was way too much that we didn't understand, but she was doing way too much for it to be believable. And I think that was the biggest issue I took with the character, especially at just every time going through it and watching it. It's, I don't know. It's, it just bugs me.
No, yeah.
She's, yeah.
That's understandable. And like Steve was saying with Star Wars, he had this huge arc and there wasn't supposed to be two Death Stars. It's because he wanted that Death Star explosion to be the last act, right? Except he only had one movie to make in 1975, 76, and when it released 77. So he had to, I have to put the Death Star in because I gotta make my whole movie and I gotta squeeze it all into like an hour and whatever minutes it is. You know what I mean? So you're right. I think Steve's right where it's like Rey might be a slow burn kind of thing. Like, know what they're doing, but again, as like, this is just taking the movies for what they are. If you're watching Force Awakens, I completely understand where you're coming from. Like, it's, you know, it's completely normal to say, yeah, I'm just, that doesn't quite satisfy me on its, as it, we stand it alone. Now, when you finish the trilogy, you might, oh, well, you know what? I got it, you know, but.
Absolutely. Yeah. Once they fill in all that stuff, it's going to completely fix the character.
Of course. And
as a stand. Oh, it's just, it's not flying for me.
Oh, yeah, and we couldn't watch 3 movies or what, 7 or whatever, how many movies there are with Luke whining about wanting to go to Tossie Station every movie. Like, just, no, like,
Power coupler,
we'd be all checked out. So, okay, well, I'm going to hop back to mine real quick. So, I said Empire, New Hope, Force Awakens, Revenge of the Sith is 4, just because I love it. I think the saber battle, I've said this on the last round table, that was my favorite because it's just, it was so epic. You mean, and again, I'm a layman watching it and I'm like, yeah, I'm completely entertained. I've been waiting to see Vader's turn and have that explained to me. Yeah, there are a ton of issues and I get it, but no, that's, I love that movie. Number 5, Jedi, for reasons, hey, it's Jedi. Again, that might be a little nostalgia from getting to go see it at the theater and completing my childhood trilogy. Next is Rogue One. I really, really liked it. Like, that was, you mean, just one of those, it was fantastic. And I'd love to put it higher, but we're on a Star Wars list. If I was having, if you threw 5 other movies in there, Rogue One would be a lot higher. You know what I mean? But we're talking about all the movies. Last 2 is Attack of the Clones and Phantom Menace is my least favorite of them all. I like it, but you mean if I have a choice, if I'm watching, you mean seven of the eight, I'm Phantom Menace is staying on the shelf, and if for no other reason than just it's just the I like the other ones better. If that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Okay, so we're just about wrapping up here. So that again, that's I don't think any surprises on our list. I don't think because we went in The Force Awakens saying, oh my god, we might see the next greatest movie, we might see the next Empire. This Last Jedi, it's the second movie in the trilogy. Do you think it's gonna go Empire? Or like we have on our lists, or yeah, like the you guys ranking them last, is going to go by way of the Attack of the Clones. what do you think, Steve? What do you think? You first. Do you think?
I think I am optimistic and excited about what they have planned for The Last Jedi.
Right.
I think a lot of just those, you know, Force Awakens was just a taste. I think, you know, they're really going to get into the meat of the story with The Last Jedi.
Right.
So, you know, tonally, you know, I think we're going to go in the way of Empire. Is it going to hit Empire caliber? I don't know. Are we going to have that I am your father moment? We kind of already had the I am your father moment with Han Solo.
Yep.
So that's kind of also my thing with Force Awakens. I almost felt like The Force Awakens was like a love letter to all three movies in the original rather than just A New Hope. You know, starting with like, you know, we started on a desert. We started, you know, we had the icy planet. We had the Death Star blowing up the end. All those things happened So that's why I kind of like see it. So I think they're going to go Empire, but go in like a different direction. So we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Good. Eric, what do you think? You just grabbing your ticket and popcorn and hoping for the best, or?
Regardless of what the movie is, I'm incredibly stoked to see it. I think, man, it needs to have the same atmosphere as Empire. At least I believe it should have that same atmosphere.
Right.
But I also think it cannot be as similar to Empire as The Force Awakens was to New Hope. I think that'll be incredibly detrimental.
Yeah. No, I hear you. And I think if I can just one last thing on these movies, I think the success of Force Awakens, for all it's worth, you mean, and I know there's a lot of opinions about it, but it is, what is it, the number one movie of all time now, like as far as box office? Like, what happened was Phantom Menace, everybody got so hyped for it. And like when everybody's so excited for something, that bar was so high. If you walked into Phantom Menace and didn't know anything about Star Wars, you would have walked out with your mind blown. Like, you know what I mean? But because we had that bar so high, and like, it's like, oh, look at Lucas. He's doing everything on his own. He's doing it all digital. Look at the technology he has. And now he has all the money in the world. He was unlimited funds. It was almost like, it's like giving a sports team, you know, here's all the money in the world and you can sign every player, and then they all show up and they all stink. You mean, like, it was one of those things, you mean? But I think the little bit of lunch bag letdown with Phantom Menace when it came out, you mean, like I said, I liked the movie, but again, you mean, I think that tempered our expectations for Force Awakens. So everybody of the age that went into the theater to see Phantom Menace and was like, oh, I was expecting something more or different, or for whatever reason, you mean, whatever the reasons were, we were like, okay, once bitten, twice shy type thing. Yeah, fool me once, shame on you. So we all went to the theater going, oh, you know what I mean? Like, we know this can go bad. When Phantom Menace came out, we never expected it to be anything but, you mean, Empire Part 2. Like, it was just, I think it set itself up, but I think Phantom Menace being unsuccessful critically set us up to be more happy with seeing Force Awakens. What do you think, Steve? Do you think that, is there any sense to that?
No, absolutely makes sense. I did not have that kind of experience. Just as I think I probably told you, and I mentioned on the podcast, like, you know, I got Star Wars a little later in life.
Right.
So, like, my fiance introduced it to me, and I got kind of episodes 1 through 6 in one shot.
Okay.
I mean, I watched New Hope to Jedi and then went back and watched 1, 2, and 3. But I kind of knew kind of what to expect. So, I mean, similar in the sense is that, like, I knew what people liked and didn't like.
Right.
You know, my fiance is like, he does not like 1, 2, 3, but he's like, these aren't as good. And I kind of went into it prefaced with that.
Right.
So I was like, okay. And I was like, but the funny thing is I went in determined to find something I liked.
Right.
You know? So I was like, okay, I like this from Phantom. I like the lightsaber battle in Phantom with Maul. I like this in Clone Wars. I like this in 3. So, you know, I'm good at finding things that I can enjoy, regardless right. of the overall quality.
Yeah.
So similar in that sense. I was like, it could be either. Yeah. But I love J.J. Abrams just in general. So, you know, I was a big Lost fan. I liked what he did with Star Trek. So I was like, I trust him enough that I felt good going into
right
the Force Awakens. Yeah,
cool. Okay, Eric, you got the final word on this. You think? I'm not sure how old you are or what your experience was with Phantom Menace. But what do you think? Is there any validity thinking? Well, maybe it's that not having the critical success made us viewing Force Awakens with more tempered expectations.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with kind of recovering from Phantom Menace going into The Force Awakens. I can definitely see how that would contribute to feeling that way. And I would agree. I saw Phantom Menace. I was like 7 or 8 when that came out. So yeah, I'm going to be 25 later this year. So I'm quite young, but the prequels were the ones that I grew up with. I saw the original trilogy first, but meaning right. those are the ones on the theaters. And I think it's really interesting perspective when you speak to the people that saw the original trilogy in theaters and then speak to the people that saw, you know, the prequels in the theaters. And now we have a new generation seeing or that will see 7, 8, and 9 in the theaters. And there's something to say for nostalgia. And that's definitely an influencing factor because a lot of younger people that saw the prequels in theaters will tend to favor those movies, at least from my experience, from right. what I've seen, my own anecdotal experiences.
Well, but, of course, yeah. It's like you mean you reach an age where people like there's a certain timeline where people love Jar Jar because when they were kids, it was just the greatest thing. The same thing, people my age. There's people that love Ewoks, but then you watch them because they were kids when they saw them. You know what I mean? Like it's one of those things. But when you watch everything in hindsight, it's like, oh, that's not for me. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, completely agree.
Awesome. Well, you know what, guys? I think for a short panel, I think we did okay, and we got another episode of the TSW Roundtable completed. So before we go, I'm just gonna whip around the table and tell everybody what you're doing. You have any other side projects outside of Star Wars, or where you can be reached, or if people wanna, you may reach out to you on Twitter or any social medias. So Steve, floor is yours. You got anything on the?
I will actually be recording an episode of Journals of the Willing after this podcast in about an hour, so keep an eye open for that.
Excellent.
Everyone can find me on Twitter at GIOANGOFET. That's Joango Fett.
Excellent. And say hi to Kyle for me. So when you speak to him, Eric, where can everybody find you or your show or what's your spiel?
Yeah, our podcast is new episode every Monday with some bonus ones thrown in from time to time. And you can find us and check us out at SDSabers or SanDiegoSabers.net. All the links to the podcast episodes are there, as well as all of our social media stuff.
Excellent. Okay, myself, you can find me. I'm on Twitter at RobertMMCast, and also I do TSW Comics along with this show with Mark from the Talk Star Wars, and that's, of course, if you're listening to this, you're listening to it on the Talk Star Wars feed. Also, check out my YouTube stuff with the Under the Dome with Robert Cast. That's my R2-D2 build as part of the Astromech Builders Club. It's not a tutorial. You're not going to have to sit there and watch me polish aluminum for 20 minutes. It's basically a progress. Hey, this is what I've done so far. So check that out if you want to see what I'm doing there. And also, I got a weekly podcast. It's kind of a comedy thing. It's I get together with my good buddy Roman, the Roman Podcast. It has nothing to do with Star Wars, but it is, you know, it's a you know, it's one of those shows. It's not for kids, but it's one of those. Hopefully, if you get a long commute and you listen to that once a week, it'll give you a giggle and you can get a laugh along with us. So, until next time, guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. And San Diego Sabres, it's awesome to have you on the network. And I'm glad, Eric, you were making an appearance. And also, please wish your partner well. I understand Steve, he wasn't feeling. He has to get better.
Yes. He shall be taking it easy for a little while.
Excellent. Yeah. So we wish him warm wishes. And Steve, I have you now. You are part of my tumbling sec. I have my complete collection. I have got them all, Steve. And we've podcast before on Journalism Willing, actually. Yeah. And it's always a pleasure and always a good time talking to you. So
yeah, thank you for having me.
Until next month, we'll see you next time. Later.